In early January of 2023, a group of researchers from Brigham Young University in Utah published a report with an ominous warning. If nothing was done soon, they cautioned, the Great Salt Lake, the largest saline lake in the Western Hemisphere directly adjacent to Salt Lake City, was on track to completely disappear within only the next 5 years by 2028. For the past 3 decades before that warning, the Great Salt Lake had already been experiencing a nearly constant pace of decline. Back in 1987, when the lake reached its historical high point, it spanned across an area of roughly 3,300 square miles, larger than the U.S. state of Delaware. From there up until early 2023, when Brigham Young University released its warning, however, the lake's size had already dramatically decreased by more than 71% to just 950 square miles still remaining, leaving behind an area of dry, exposed lake bed larger than the island of Maui. And hence, the dire fear at the time that the rest of the lake could be totally gone within just the next 5 years. But thanks to record-high snowfall that came almost immediately afterwards over the next 2 winters, the Great Salt Lake has modestly recovered some of its size since then. But many scientists still warn that without massive human intervention, the lake's long-term decline is still all but a certainty in a world that is still warming and in a state that is still living far beyond its means when it comes to water resources. While it might not happen by 2028 like the Brigham Young University researchers initially warned in 2023, the Great Salt Lake still remains at a very high risk of completely vanishing within our lifetime soon. And it will do much, much more than just alter the map of North America if it happens. Considered by some researchers to be a ticking environmental nuclear bomb, the complete collapse of the Great Salt Lake stands to become the greatest environmental disaster that the United States will likely experience during the entire 21st century. It stands to render much of Utah, including Salt Lake City, increasingly uninhabitable as huge amounts of arsenic-laced toxic dust will increasingly billow up from the dried-up former lake bed. It stands to irreparably damage Utah's real estate, ski, tourism, and mining industries. It stands to completely collapse one of the most important ecosystems in North America that supports millions of migrating birds. It risks undermining the entire global food industry, and it risks toxic dust blowing from well beyond Utah's own borders into surrounding states like Nevada, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, and Arizona as well. It is a massive disaster in waiting that is currently not being taken as seriously as it should be by most. So let's figure out how we got to this point and what we can actually do to save the lake. The modern Great Salt Lake is the successor to the historical Lake Bonneville, a massive inland body of water that used to exist during the last ice age when the climate had higher precipitation levels and cooler temperatures that reduced evaporation rates. Lake Bonneville used to be nearly 51,000 square kilometers in surface area and more than 300 meters deep about 17,000 years ago, which made it roughly equivalent in size to modern-day Lake Michigan, and made it function as more of an inland sea rather than just a mere lake. As the last ice age came to a close and the climate warmed and precipitation decreased, the lake dramatically shrank in size and left behind a series of smaller successor lakes in the region that we know today, like Sevier Lake, Utah Lake, and the largest among them, the Great Salt Lake. Still the third largest lake by surface area contained fully within the United States today after Lake Michigan and the Iliamna Lake in Alaska. Today, the existence of these successor lakes here create one of the largest oases of life cradled within the great North American deserts. If you begin at the edge of the Pacific coast in the west and you draw a line running east, you would see that quickly after crossing over Northern California and over the Cascade and Klamath Mountains, you would enter into the vast desert of the Great Basin that takes up most of Nevada, one of the driest and least hospitable regions that can be found in North America. And it's only a part of the greater North American deserts. A series of ecologically distinct deserts spanning across the western side of the continent, including the Northern Basin, the Wyoming Basin, the Colorado Plateau, the Arizona-New Mexico Plateau, and the Mojave Desert. But in between all of these deserts, hundreds of miles away from the lush areas of Northern California, spans a huge green oasis 100 miles north to south, cradled between the Lake Bonneville successor lakes in the west and the Wasatch Mountains in the east, where abundant life and civilization once again becomes possible. Today, this oasis contains a densely populated, continuous metropolis of cities and people. An island of urban density surrounded by hundreds of miles of empty deserts in every direction. Running north to south within this oasis are the continuous modern metropolitan areas of Ogden Clearfield, Salt Lake City, and Provo Orem, collectively home to more than 2.8 million people now in what is most often referred to as the Wasatch Front. Home to more than 80% of Utah's entire statewide population, the Wasatch Front is the core of the whole state, and for years, it's also been one of the fastest-growing regions in all of America, due to its spectacular and accessible natural beauty and its relatively modest cost of living compared to alternatives in California and the Northeast. The median-priced home in Salt Lake City is still about a third less than it is in Los Angeles, and it's more than 40% less than it is in San Diego, as an example. The Wasatch Front first began receiving significant European settlement in 1847 with the arrival of the Mormon pioneers. Over a span of about 20 years, roughly 70,000 of them trekked out on their wagons from the American Midwest across the continent to eventually settle in the Wasatch Front following the killing of the Mormons' first leader and prophet, Joseph Smith, by a mob in Illinois in 1844. The Mormon pioneers settled and founded Salt Lake City on the edge of the Great Salt Lake in 1847 and made it the global headquarters of the Mormon Church, which it continues to remain today and which has always given Salt Lake City a degree of religious significance and appeal. Today, the Mormon Church claims a membership of more than 17.5 million people all across the world, although probably only around a third of those people are actually active participating members of the church, implying that in reality, there's probably more like between 5 and 6 million truly practicing Mormons today who look at Salt Lake City as the spiritual headquarters of their faith. For nearly a century after the founding of Salt Lake City, however, the population found within the Wasatch Front continued to remain modest and within the bounds of what could naturally be supported. A century later, by 1950, the population all across the Wasatch Front had only increased around 500,000 people, 85 to 90% of whom, at the time, were estimated to be entirely members of the Mormon Church. But from there, across the 1950s and beyond, the population in the Wasatch Front would begin exploding due to a combination of factors following the post-war boom that followed the Second World War. Within only 30 years, by 1980, the population within the Wasatch Front doubled to roughly 1 million people. And then in just a little over 20 more years, at some point in the 2000s, it doubled again to roughly 2 million people. Now, in 2025, the Wasatch Front is home to more than 2.8 million people, nearly six times as many people who lived within this oasis environment just 75 years ago, back in 1950. The population growth across the Wasatch Front has been so great recently that it's made the whole state of Utah among the fastest growing states in the whole country across the 2020s. Since 2020 alone, Utah's population has grown by more than 7%, making it the fourth highest growth state in America this decade behind only Florida, Idaho, and Texas. To accommodate all of this rapid growth, Utah is also currently experiencing the fourth highest amount of new home construction in the country as well, contributing to a booming economy that is greatly financially benefiting the elected members of the Utah State Legislature, since around a third of them are estimated to have ties to the state's booming real estate industry, according to a recent investigation by the New York Times. Historically, all of this growth in people within the Wasatch Front has been fueled by the region's unique hydrology that makes it all possible, and which also makes the Great Salt Lake possible. Heavy snow falls during the winter months on the Wasatch Mountains that tower above the oasis to the east. And then during the spring months, that snow will melt, which feeds the region's three great rivers, the Bear, Weber, and Jordan Rivers, which all empty out into the Great Salt Lake and provide it with virtually all of its water. The Great Salt Lake itself is a terminal endorheic saline lake with no natural outlet, meaning that the only way that water leaves from the lake naturally is through evaporation. Before the era of modern extensive human settlement in the Wasatch Front, this hydrological system here existed within a fragile and easily disturbable balance. During the warm summer season, the natural evaporation rate would cause the Great Salt Lake to lose about 2 feet worth of its water levels, which would then be replaced during the following spring when the snow melt up in the mountains fed down into the rivers that fed back down into the lake. The rivers also carried minerals down into the lake from the mountains too, but without any natural outlet, the water that always left every summer through evaporation always kept leaving behind all of the minerals in the lake, which caused the lake to grow saltier than the ocean and which gave it its name, the Great Salt Lake. Now, however, two major factors are driving a disruption in this historical balance that is causing the Great Salt Lake's dramatic shrinkage: the the explosive population growth in the Wasatch Front that's increasing the region's water demands and needs, and climate change that's increasing temperatures and increasing the lake's evaporation rates further beyond its historical norms. Beginning in the 1900s, federal and state construction of various dams, canals, and pipelines along the three major rivers that feed the lake enable for more of the water in the rivers to be diverted for other purposes, like for agriculture, industries, and municipal water use in the growing cities, which began depriving the Great Salt Lake of much of its ability to replenish itself naturally. The human consumption of water from these rivers in the Wasatch Front reached unsustainable levels for the Great Salt Lake's long-term stability quickly by the 1960s. And so, the lake began declining in size then. Luckily, an extraordinarily rare wet period for the Wasatch Front in the 1980s managed to briefly replenish what the lake had lost in the 1960s and 70s. But after that climatic period ended and the lake peaked in size in 1987, it's been a nearly continuous decline again ever since. Notably, between 2020 and 2023, the Great Salt Lake was receiving less than one-third of the amount of water through the three rivers that it naturally did historically before the mass settlement of humans in the region, resulting in the lake's ability to replenish its natural losses through evaporation becoming crippled. Great Salt Lake naturally receives about 3.1 million acre-feet of water per year through the rivers that feed into the lake. It receives about another 600,000 acre-feet of water per year through direct precipitation, while about 2.6 million acre-feet of water per year leaves the lake through evaporation, meaning that in theory, the sustainable level of human water consumption from the system would be around 1.1 million acre-feet of water per year in order to keep the Great Salt Lake stable. However, the current rate of human water consumption in the system catastrophically exceeds this. Humans are withdrawing about 2.1 million acre-feet of water per year from the rivers upstream that feed into the lake, while mineral extraction operations at the lake withdraw another 200,000 acre-feet of water more per year as well, meaning that the Great Salt Lake has been experiencing an annual water deficit of 1.2 million acre-feet of water for years now, which, of course, is primarily what's driving the lake's shrinkage. In order to fully re-stabilize the Great Salt Lake and save it now, the millions of people living within the Wasatch Front will need to collectively cut their current water consumption rate by more than half, which is a massive obstacle to do in the face of the region's ingrained industries and interests, and Utah's dreams of even further growth and expansion beyond their already deeply strained water resources. Currently, the cities and industries within the Wasatch Front only use about 9% of the water that's being pulled from the rivers. But an astonishing 90% of that usage is being dedicated exclusively to outdoor water use, like watering lawns and plants. With a per-person daily water consumption rate of 96 gallons in 2021, Salt Lake City residents also just consume a lot more water than the residents of other desert cities in the United States do, like Tucson or Los Angeles, where residents consume only 78 and 77 gallons of water per day, respectively. Extracting minerals from the Great Salt Lake itself, like salt, sulfate, potash fertilizer, and magnesium, consumes another 9% of the water use, while water losses through leaks and inefficiencies in reservoirs consume another 8%. By far and away, though, the largest use of water in the Wasatch Front is all dedicated to agriculture, which consumes a whopping 74% of all the water that's currently being pulled from the system. Agriculture in Utah is naturally challenging, since the state is dry and mostly covered by deserts and mountain valleys. Farmers who acquired water rights in the state found early on in Utah's history that alfalfa was one of the few economically viable crops that could be grown there that help adapt them to arid environments, and the fact that it can be harvested multiple times a year, which is another big local industry found in Utah as well. But alfalfa also requires a lot of water to grow and sustain. So much so that out of the 74% of all the water in the Great Salt Lake Basin that's dedicated to agriculture right now, 3/4 is all entirely dedicated to just growing alfalfa. While alfalfa is a staple of Utah's rural economy, it's an extremely minor component of the state's overall economy, accounting for less than 1% of the state's total GDP, despite how much of the state's water it consumes. Despite this, Utah's Republican-dominated government that bristles at even the thought of regulation has been reluctant to constrain the alfalfa industry's water consumption in the state, Since it's a major component of the rural Utah economy that heavily leans Republican, and since it's also a basis for the state's dairy and beef industries, which are also big in the rural parts of the state that lean Republican. So far, the Utah state government has done virtually nothing to curb the overuse of water in the state, and doing what's necessary to really stabilize the Great Salt Lake by cutting their water consumption in half is politically dangerous, since doing so would inevitably harm the influential farmers and ranchers in the rural parts of the state. And at the same time, Utah's made no plans to halt the development of the suburban sprawl radiating throughout the Wasatch Front either. Despite the Wasatch Front already living far beyond their natural means in regards to water consumption, the Salt Lake City metropolitan area is currently projected by the state to add another 600,000 more additional residents by 2060. In order to meet the increased demand for all these new people, the region will have to either divert even more water from the rivers and streams that feed the Great Salt Lake, recycle more of their own wastewater, or pull more groundwater from wells, all of which will further decrease the amount of water entering into the Great Salt Lake even further. And of course, just as humans are pulling even more water from the Great Salt Lake system than they ever have before, climate change is increasing what used to be the lake's natural rate of evaporation as well. The researchers involved with a 2023 Brigham Young University study estimated that human greenhouse gas emissions have caused a warming of around 4 degrees Fahrenheit in northern Utah around the lake since the start of the 20th century, increasing the pace of evaporation in the Great Salt Lake that has accounted for roughly 9% of the lake's decline since the late 1980s. While the vast majority of the rest of the decline has come from all of the diversions to the lake's rivers and streams that are primarily being used for agriculture and alfalfa harvesting. These are all of the reasons why the Great Salt Lake has crashed so much in size since 1987, plummeting by more than 71% in overall surface area from then by early 2023. Luckily, shortly after the Brigham Young University team published their research and warning in early January of 2023, the Wasatch Front experienced one of the highest levels of snowfall it's ever experienced across the rest of the winter that season that made it the highest snowfall winter in the region since the winter in 1992-93. That enabled the Great Salt Lake to modestly recover from some of its all-time low. But it also, troublingly, had absolutely nothing to do with human intervention to save the lake. It was pure environmental luck, and the winters since then have been much, much worse in terms of snowfall. The 2024-25 winter season, in particular, was abysmally low for snowfall on the Wasatch Front, coming in at the second lowest amount of snowfall recorded here during the entire 21st century, and one of the bottom six snowfall levels ever recorded in the region going back to the start of reliable record-keeping in 1884. The danger has not gone away. Utah has not resolved their overconsumption of water, and if anything, they're planning to only continue increasing it even further. And so, the Great Salt Lake still stands to irreversibly vanish soon within the next few years unless drastic action is taken quickly. And if the worst comes to pass and the lake really does end up vanishing, here are all of the myriad horrific consequences that'll follow. Beneath the surface of saline lakes, pollutants caused by nearby human activities like mining, agriculture, urban runoff, and coal burning will become concentrated over time. As a result, the lake bed beneath the Great Salt Lake is known to contain high amounts of toxic materials like arsenic, lead, mercury, copper, antimony, zirconium, and others. As the lake continues to dry, more and more of these toxic materials that are currently safely buried beneath the lake will become exposed to the surface, where they will increasingly get picked up by the wind and form highly toxic dust clouds that will threaten the health of millions of people all across the Wasatch Front nearby. The more that the lake shrinks in size, the worse the air quality all across the Wasatch Front will become. Large-scale toxic dust storms blowing across the Wasatch Front from the dried-up Great Salt Lake will exacerbate regional rates of respiratory illnesses, eye conditions, cancers, cardiovascular damage, reproductive dysfunction, and other problems, which will sharply negatively affect the quality of life in the Wasatch Front, harm local businesses' ability to attract and retain employees, and put downward pressure on the region's real estate prices as it becomes a less desirable place to live and work. In order to get an idea of how bad the situation could get for the Wasatch Front's real estate market, one only needs to look about 560 miles to the southwest at the Salton Sea in Southern California, another shrinking saline lake that is causing similar problems for its community. The peak surface area of the Salton Sea is only about one-tenth of the size of what the Great Salt Lake was at its peak in 1987. And it's also contained within a fairly rural, remote part of the country that's home to only about 650,000 people. So its shrinkage is nowhere near as destructive as the loss of the Great Salt Lake will be, where nearly 3 million people live. Nonetheless, the decline of the Salton Sea has dramatically increased airborne dust levels and tanked the region's air quality, leading to childhood asthma rates in the region skyrocketing to more than 3 times the California statewide average and inflicting an estimated $7 billion loss on the local real estate market from the increased dust storms. With a lake 10 times the size, home to a regional population more than 4 times the size, the loss of the Great Salt Lake will inevitably become even more catastrophic for Utah. Toxins from the dust storms will also become deposited all across the agricultural lands in the state and degrade local soil fertility, undermining the long-term potential for agriculture in Utah anyway, even if the farmers don't cut back on their water consumption today. Not restricted to the Wasatch Front, the toxic dust storms could also blow over across state lines and impact communities in neighboring states like Nevada, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, and Arizona as well. To make matters even worse, the shrinking lake and the increased dust storms caused by it will begin to decrease the region's snowpack as well, further eliminating the lake's natural ability to replenish itself and undermining one of the region's key industries, winter sports like skiing and snowboarding. Dust blowing up from the dried-up lake bed will become deposited on the Wasatch Mountains and increase the melting rate of snowpack there, shortening the snow season in the process, while the increasingly smaller lake will produce less and less of a regional lake effect during the winter as well. During the winter season, cold air will pick up heat and moisture from the relatively warmer body of water in the Great Salt Lake, which will form clouds and dump snow downwind across the Wasatch Mountains, adding greatly to the region's snowfall and winter sports culture. But without the presence of the Great Salt Lake, this historical lake effect during the winter will become permanently lost, and snowfall in the Wasatch Front will become permanently lower, harming the local ski and snowboard season in the process. A study published by the Environmental Law Institute earlier this year in 2025 concluded that the loss of the Great Salt Lake's lake effect in the region will potentially decrease the average annual snowpack in the Wasatch Mountains by between 5.1 and 8.4%, which will be cataclysmic for the ski and snowboard season across the many resorts found all throughout this area. The research also showed that in 2022, when the Great Salt Lake shrank to its lowest ever level, the ski season in the region was 2 weeks shorter than it otherwise would have been naturally. With the complete loss of the lake, the ski season in the Wasatch Front will inevitably grow even shorter than it's ever been before, threatening what's currently the $2 billion a year ski industry in Utah that directly supports nearly 26,000 jobs, and potentially even threatening the viability of the 2034 Winter Olympics that are scheduled to take place in Salt Lake City. And even worse, the decreased amount of snowpack in the mountains caused by the loss of the lake will decrease the region's available water supplies for agricultural, industrial, and municipal uses as well, further restraining the state's ability to grow the way that it wants to in the future. The mineral extraction industry that currently operates in the Great Salt Lake will be entirely destroyed by its loss, directly threatening more than 5,000 additional jobs in the state, and crippling the supply of the lake's potash fertilizer and magnesium that are critical components for American agriculture and beverage can production. The Great Salt Lake is also home to what is currently a thriving brine shrimp industry. The lake currently provides around 40% of the entire global supply of brine shrimp, which are used as a primary feed source for raising fish in aquacultures around the world. The loss of the lake will collapse this entire industry in the state as well, threatening more than 500 more jobs and another $67 million in annual economic output. The Great Salt Lake is also a critical link found in the Pacific Flyway, the major north-south migratory pattern taken by birds between Alaska and South America. The lake provides a natural habitat and food source that supports more than 10 million migratory birds a year belonging to hundreds of different species. So, if the lake disappears, so too will all of these birds, who will adjust their migration patterns away from Utah, undermining recreational bird watching in the state as well. In other words, the loss of the Great Salt Lake will be far more cataclysmic for Utah than doing what's necessary to save it in the present by cutting its overuse of water. Perhaps the biggest parallel for Salt Lake City and the Wasatch Front today is what Los Angeles went through in the 20th century during its own never-ending quest for water. Back in the early 1900s, LA was growing rapidly and was running out of water to support its growth. Desperate to acquire more water wherever it could in order to keep the growth going, the Los Angeles Water Department bought up land along the banks of the Owens River, and then constructed a vast aqueduct that diverted the river's waters 230 miles away to Los Angeles. Unfortunately, the Owens River was the primary source of water that fed into nearby Owens Lake, which back then spanned across an area of over 100 square miles. The unsustainable amount of water that Los Angeles diverted from the Owens River was enough to send Owens Lake into an irreversible downward spiral, and by 1926, it had completely dried up and was lost forever. Since then, the collapse of Owens Lake has become one of America's all-time greatest environmental catastrophes. Wind has kicked up fine dust from the dried-up lake bed and infiltrated nearby residents' lungs for nearly a century, spiking asthma and heart conditions around the former lake in the process. The dried-up Owens Lake bed has been the largest source of fine dust and particle pollution in the United States for decades, and it's only 1/15th the size of the Great Salt Lake in Utah. Local residents around Owens Lake were eventually able to successfully sue the city of Los Angeles in court for causing the disaster, and the city was ordered to do whatever it could to reduce the dust problem in the early 1990s. Since then, LA, even with all of its huge resources, has still struggled to contain the disaster despite having spent more than $2.5 billion on it. The city has attempted to cover the entire dried-up lake bed with gravel and has installed countless sprinklers across it to spray just enough water on the dust to keep it in place. Dozens of full-time employees are present at the former Owens Lake at all times of the year in order to try and keep its potential for airborne pollution down to a minimum, while most of the small towns that used to exist around the lake before it dried up have declined and rotted away as the air quality worsened. Scaled up to a lake that's 15 times larger with a nearby population of millions around it, a similar fate to the Great Salt Lake and the Wasatch Front to Owens Lake would stand to potentially become the greatest ecological disaster in the United States during the entire 21st century. And one cannot discount the potential cultural effects of the lake's disappearance either. Salt Lake City itself was named after the Great Salt Lake when it was first settled nearly two centuries ago, back in the 19th century. Without the lake, the city's name will eventually become symbolic of a bygone era caused through humanity's own hubris and its lack of respect for nature. In order to turn things around and save the lake and prevent the disaster that'll follow, Utah will have to dramatically curb its overconsumption of water rapidly, which will be painful because it'll harm Utah's agricultural industry and reduce the growth of suburban sprawl and lawns that the state so loves. But not taking that painful step in the short term will result in significantly more pain for the state in the long term if it ends up resulting in the complete collapse of the Great Salt Lake. And I can only hope that Utah and its people will find the resolve that's needed in these difficult times to do what they can, and indeed, what they must. Now, there's a lot of data that goes into producing these kinds of videos. Whether it's visually showing you the scale that the Great Salt Lake has shrunk over the years, detailing out how the hydrology around the lake works and how much humans are over-withdrawing from the system, or showing you how Los Angeles similarly destroyed Owens Lake during the 20th century, the ability to actually visualize raw data like this on the map instead of just reading about it in text format is exactly what makes learning about these kinds of complicated environmental issues so fascinating to me. And it's why the Exploring Data Visually course is one of my favorite courses that I've ever taken with this video sponsor, Brilliant. They start out by teaching some real bare-bones fundamentals through interactive exercise and straightforward explanations. Then, as you progress, they bring these small concepts together into the bigger process, and soon enough, you have a decent grasp of what originally seemed like a daunting subject. And the same goes for all of the other subjects they cover too, from calculus to AI to computer science, advanced physics, geometry, and much more. I think that Brilliant is perfect for the kind of person who genuinely loves understanding new things, as they get you to the level where you can apply the concepts you learn into your everyday life. And they also make learning super practical. Their courses break down into short segments of about 15 minutes, so you can easily use their app to make steady progress in learning while you're commuting or have some free time. So if you're the type of person who loves learning new things, you can try out everything Brilliant has to offer for free by clicking the button here on your screen right now, or by visiting brilliant.org/reallifelore, or by clicking the link that's down below in the description. And best of all, you'll also get 20% off of an annual premium subscription, which gives you unlimited daily access to everything that's on Brilliant. It's an incredible way to help support my channel and learn some cool new things at the same time. And as always, thank you so much for watching.